Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. We begin above the fold on the front page. Suspended teacher Rob Pacey. DCFS records to be released to plaintiffs. That includes all hotline calls mentioning Pacey. Paxton. The Illinois Department of Children and Family Services will be required to release all of its investigative files on Rob Pacey to the attorney for five current and former students who claim in lawsuits filed last year that they were inappropriately touched by the suspended Paxton Buckley Loda teacher and one-time coach. During a half-hour hearing in Ford County Circuit Court on Wednesday, April 22nd, McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley, who has been assigned the civil cases, granted the plaintiff's motion to compel the DCFS to respond to a previously served subpoena. The subpoena requested the release of all investigative files regarding Pacey in the agency's possession, including all hotline calls received regarding his alleged misconduct since 2009. Per Foley's ruling, the DCFS will be required to release unredacted information regarding the specific complaints initiated by the plaintiffs, while other information is to be redacted, at least initially, to protect the names of the reporting parties. Whether the names of some reporting parties can eventually be revealed to the plaintiffs will be determined once the files are reviewed, Foley noted. The plaintiff's attorney, Bhavni Ravindran of Chicago, said the hotline calls, or lack thereof, could help corroborate her client's claims that the administrators were well aware of a pattern of complaints of sexual misconduct, but never notified the DCFS as required. In addition to the PBL School District and Pacey, defendants include junior high school principal Josh Didier and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure. We also believe that information in the DCFS files will be relevant for us to find additional witnesses who may have observed Pacey's conduct over time and who may have called in with regard to that conduct, Ravindran told Foley. While Ravindran requested the release of unredacted hotline calls, including callers' names, DCFS counsel Jennifer Clark argued that against the release of any unredacted files, noting that reporters' anonymity is expected under the Abused and Neglected Child Reporting Act. Our overall concern is that if records are released that are unredacted, then reports might not get made to DCFS in the future because reporters aren't guaranteed that they will have that confidentiality, Clark told Foley. Chicago attorney Emily Schnitt, who is representing Pacey, agreed with Clark. Schnitt, joined by Itasca attorney Michael Bersani, who is representing the other defendants, also argued against the release of any files not directly related to the claims already made in the plaintiff's lawsuits. Schnitt repeatedly called it a fishing expedition by the plaintiffs, at one point saying they were putting the cart before the horse. Schnitt noted that even if there were additional claims made to DCFS than those alleged in the lawsuits, those additional claims would be irrelevant to the civil case unless the DCFS communicated those claims to the school. There are a lot of hurdles that need to be overcome before the plaintiff is allowed to break the confidentiality that's assured by statute and obtain hotline phone calls that may or may not exist, Schnitt told Foley. You can't allow discovery to go this broad on a hunch that something may have occurred. Ravindran said she disagreed, though. Ravindran noted that already allegations of nearly 22 incidents involving the non-consensual touching of students by Pacey, but the only way to establish that the school district failed to alert the DCFS of those incidents would be to find out what DCFS has in its files. We believe that, for many of those prior incidents, there may be DCFS hotline calls or something that references those incidents, which would corroborate the plaintiff's complaint, Profinden told Foley. In making her ruling, Foley first noted that a relatively broad range of information can be considered relevant to the discovery process in any specific civil case. Whether it is relevant, Foley said, is decided by whether it is either admissible information or information that reasonably could lead to the discovery of admissible information. In this case, the information requested could indeed be relevant, Foley noted, as it could lead to the identification of other witnesses or about the reporting or non-reporting of incidents to the DCFS by school administrators. Despite objections from Schnitt and Bersani, Foley also granted a separate motion to compel filed by Ravindran requiring that the Illinois State Board of Education turn over its investigative files on Pacey to the plaintiffs. The records will be released only after an additional protective order is finalized to ensure that the ISBE is meeting its statutory requirements, according to Foley's ruling. The information obtained via subpoena by the plaintiffs will be labeled confidential in the court file as permitted under an existing protective order entered last fall. Foley set another status hearing in the case for 1:30 p.m., Monday, June 15th. Foley also set a deadline of Monday, June 1st for the defendants to file their responsive pleadings to amended civil complaints filed by Ravindran on April 20th. A deadline of Monday, June 22nd was also set for the issuance of written discovery. The amended complaints, including one additional count, Ravindran said, but otherwise no substantial changes. Pacey was suspended last spring as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School in Paxton and remains on paid administrative leave. He has not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing, saying in a statement last summer that he is deeply troubled by the claims and without a doubt has done nothing wrong. Back on the front page, again above the fold, right beside our last story, former teacher Paul Muser. Lawyer says, retrial detainment erroneous. Motion seeks Muser's release from county jail. Paxton. The attorney for a former Paxton Buckley Lota High School teacher accused of soliciting a teenager for sex is asking a judge to reconsider her recent order requiring his pretrial detainment. Defense attorney Lance Cagle filed a motion for relief in Ford County Circuit Court on Friday, April 17th, requesting that Livingston County Judge Mary Cole, who has been assigned the case, vacate her April 9th order for the pretrial detention of Paul L. Muser, 72, of Buckley, and grant Muser's pretrial release with such conditions as the court deems appropriate and as authorized by statute. In the 10-page filing, Cagle argued that Cole's denial of Muser's pretrial release was erroneous, and it was contrary to the presumption and statutory factors set forth in the Pretrial Fairness Act and contrary to the controlling case law. During a preliminary hearing on Wednesday, April 22nd, Cole continued the hearing to 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 6th, at which time she will rule on Cagle's motion. The upcoming hearing will be conducted both remotely via Zoom and in person from Cole's Livingston County courtroom, according to online court records. It is expected to last up to 2 hours. In the meantime, Muser remains in custody in Ford County, where he is charged with 2 counts of attempted criminal sexual assault, a Class 2 felony, 1 count of indecent solicitation of a child, a Class 2 felony, and 1 count of grooming, a Class 4 felony. Muser was placed on administrative leave from his positions as driver's education and physical education teacher on March 8th, amid an investigation into alleged inappropriate communications with a minor, and he then resigned on March 11th. Buser was arrested on a warrant 5 days later in Oklahoma, where he led a Hall of Fame career as a head boys basketball coach and taught at various high schools. According to charging documents, Muser allegedly invited a teenager to his home last Christmas Eve, intending to commit a sexual act with the teen. Also, between January 2025 and December 24, 2025, Muser allegedly offered the teen snacks and money, discussed things of a sexual nature, including his desire to perform acts of sexual penetration with the child, and exchanged emails with the teen outside of school, according to charging documents. Meanwhile, Cagle argued that Cole, in her oral ruling to deny Muser's release, erroneously found that Muser poses a real and significant danger to the community and is unlikely to comply with some or all pretrial release conditions that could be imposed in this case. In her ruling, Cole noted that the court had performed an individualized risk assessment of Muser and that the Office of State Pretrial Services had limited ability to monitor potential computer use by Muser if he were to be released, Cagle said. Cole did, though, recite or specify, did not, though, recite or specify how any of the statutory factors to be considered in the denial of pretrial release weighed for or against Muser. The statutory factors, as applied to the facts before the court, weigh overwhelmingly in favor of the defendant's presumed right to pretrial release and the finding that he poses no danger to the community, Cagle argued. Regarding the first statutory factor, the nature and characteristics of the alleged offense, including whether it is a crime of violence, including a weapon, or a sex offense, Cagle noted that Muser's pretrial detainment was based only on the grooming charge, which did not allege any sexual or violent contact. According to Cagle, Cole found that Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian had met the state's burden to prove that the evidence is clear and the presumption is great that Muser committed grooming. But Cole found that Killian failed to meet that same burden for the attempted criminal sexual assault charge and made no ruling and was otherwise silent regarding the indecent solicitation charge. Though grooming is categorized as a sex offense, the proffer was clear that there was no sexual contact nor violent contact between the defendant and the alleged victim, and that no weapons were part of the defendant's alleged conduct, Cagle noted. It was further stipulated that the electronic communications between the defendant and the alleged victim were not explicitly sexual in nature and contained no lewd language, photography, or other sexual depictions. As for the second factor, the history and characteristics of the defendant, Cagle noted that Muser has no criminal history of any kind and no other known history involving violent and abusive behavior. No evidence or administrative proceedings, civil proceedings, or other records were proffered suggesting any violent, abusive, or assaultive history, Cagle said. The defendant proffered that he has been a public school teacher and head coach for 48 years at 6 different school districts, that the Ford County Sheriff's deputies assigned to the case had conducted follow-up calls to the school districts that Mr. Muser had worked at, and those who responded reported no incidents of misconduct and stated Mr. Muser had left in good standing. No evidence was proffered suggesting psychological, psychiatric, or other social history, including a violent, abusive, or assaultive behavior. Regarding factor number 3, the identity of any person or persons whose safety the defendant is believed to pose a threat, and the nature of the threat, Cagle noted that the alleged victim never indicated that she feared Mr. Muser, received any threats from Mr. Muser, or had any communications with Mr. Muser since email communications on December 24, 2025. It has also never been alleged that Mr. Muser engaged in dangerous or inappropriate behavior toward other individuals or the community in general, Cagle noted. In regards to factor number four, any statements made by or attributed to the defendant, together with the circumstances surrounding them, Cagle said, no proffer was made of any threatening communication or other statements by Mr. Muser which suggest dangerousness. As for the fifth factor, whether the defendant is known to possess or have any weapon or weapons, Cagle said, Mr. Muser is not believed to own or have in his possession any weapons, nor is he a firearms owner investigation identification card holder. Regarding other factors, Cagle noted that Muser has been diagnosed with blood cancer and is taking medication for it. Cagle said that Muser has cooperated with the police investigation as well. According to Cagle, Muser was aware of the investigation on or about February 23, 2026, spoke to the police voluntarily, and provided his cell phone and passwords for forensic inspection. Cagle also mentioned Muser's score of 0 out of 14 on his pretrial risk assessment, placing him in the lowest percentile of risk to reoffend or violate the terms of pretrial release, Cagle said. He believes Cole did not give sufficient weight to Muser's risk assessment score and further did not specify any reason why either a particular condition of pretrial release was inadequate to mitigate the risk to the public or why Mr. Muser was particularly likely to violate the conditions of pretrial release. The court mentioned that OSPS could not easily monitor computer access and that home confinement and GPS monitoring did not prevent such access, Cagle said. However, the evidence proffered did not establish that Mr. Muser was engaged in a broader pattern of computer usage and that was potentially criminal in nature. The defense proffered that the official police reports indicated that the forensic search of Mr. Muser's phone was stated in a police report to have contained nothing of evidentiary value outside of the email exchange between Muser and the teen, the content of which was not explicitly sexual in nature. Lastly, Cagle argued that Cole's granting of the petition to detain Muser is directly contrary to a large body of recent Illinois appellate case law, including a substantial number of cases from the Fourth District Court of Appeals, which have reversed pretrial detention orders in cases where defendants with no prior history of violent crimes and low risk of pretrial risk assessments were charged with computer-based sex offenses for which probation is an authorized disposition. In similar offense cases, where pretrial detentions have been upheld in the 4th District, the defendants in question have had higher scores on the pretrial risk assessment, past criminal histories, or other aggravated background or offense factors not applicable to Mr. Muser, Cagle noted. When the controlling case law is considered, the facts of Mr. Muser's case are both factually and legally similar to the cases where the trial court's detention decision was reversed, and this is even more compelling as applied to Mr. Muser, Cagle continued. Because he is 72 years old, and his low-risk assessment is based on a longer and more complete life history than the substantially younger defendants in other cases. Cagle said the pretrial release conditions of home detention and electronic monitoring with exclusion zones would clearly mitigate the risk of Muser coming into personal contact with the alleged victim. Muser, a 2024 PBL Alumni Hall of Fame inductee and a 1972 Paxton High School graduate, has pleaded not guilty. If convicted, Muser would face a sentence ranging from probation to up to 7 years in prison for each Class II felony, along with a term ranging from probation to up to 3 years in prison for the Class 4 felony. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, April 29th. Glenna M. Diskin, Hoopston. Glenna Marjorie Diskin, 99, of Hoopston, died at 5:02 p.m. Tuesday, April 21st, at Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center. A funeral mass will be held at 1:15 p.m. at St. Anthony Catholic Church in Hoopston, with Father Ignatius Melinda officiating. Burial will be at the Rankin Union Cemetery in Rankin. Memorial donations may be made in her memory to St. Anthony Catholic Church in Hoopston. Wanda Sue Garrett, Paxton. Wanda Sue Garrett, 83, of Paxton, died at 10:49 p.m. Thursday, April 23rd, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton. Private family services will be held. Marilyn L. Neiman, Buckley. Marilyn Louise Neiman, 91, of Buckley, died at 8:42 a.m. Friday, April 24th, at the Villas of Hollybrook in Rantoul. Funeral services were held Thursday, April 30th, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley, with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial followed in St. John's Cemetery in Buckley. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley, Transitions Hospice, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Joseph A. Schaefer, Gibson City. Joseph Allen Schaefer, 59, of Gibson City, died Tuesday, April 14th at St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Louis G. Stroh, Anchor. Louis G. Stroh, 72, of rural Anchor, died Friday, April 17th at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. A private family celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School FFA chapter. Turning back to the front page, we have from the Ford County Government, change at the top. Kelsey Vaughn, very interested in filling county clerk and recorder vacancy. Kelsey Vaughn said Thursday that she is very interested in filling the Ford County Clerk and Recorder's job next month when the County Board considers the appointment of a replacement for Amy Frederick. Vaughn, who narrowly defeated Frederick for the clerk's post in the March 17th Republican primary election and is unopposed in the November 3rd general election, would serve as clerk on an interim basis through November 30th if appointed, then begin her four-year elected term as clerk on December 1st. I am very interested in being considered for the appointment as Ford County Clerk and would be honored to serve, Vaughn said in a text message to the Ford County Chronicle. I am ready to step in and work diligently for the people of Ford County. If Vaughn were to be appointed interim clerk, she would be required to vacate her elected position as a District 1 County Board member. Vaughn is in her second year in the role, with two more remaining on her term starting in December. The County Board's chairman, Chase McCall of Gibson City, has scheduled a special board meeting for 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 5th, to formally declare the clerk's position vacant. An appointment to fill the remaining 7 months of Frederick's term will be made during the board's regular monthly meeting at 6 p.m. Monday, May 11th. Both meetings will be in the boardroom in the basement of the county jail and sheriff's office in Paxton and are open to the public. Frederick submitted her resignation letter to McCall on Wednesday, April 15th, effective at the close of business on Friday, April 17th, after having accepted a position as an executive assistant in Champaign. Frederick's resignation came almost 10 years after she first became Ford County Clerk and Recorder, and more than 18 years after she started her employment in the County Clerk's and Recorder's office. The 53-year-old Frederick, a native of Gibson City and lifelong Ford County resident, said she will continue to live in Paxton. On Thursday, Vaughn said she would like to wish Amy Frederick the very best in her new role. The 39-year-old Vaughn, a Paxton resident, is currently employed at Paxton Family Dental. Vaughn previously served on the Paxton Community Nursery School Board from 2011 to 2018, including as its secretary and president. She has also served as St. John's Lutheran School PTL Board Vice President and will soon be the board's president for the 2026-27 school year. A resident of Ford County since 1990, she graduated in 2004 from Paxton Buckley Lota High School and in 2007 from Parkland College in Champaign. In response to a Ford County Chronicle survey in advance of her primary election, Vaughn said her priorities, if elected, would be timely tax bills for Ford County, building a rapport with constituents, colleagues, and citizens, accuracy in all records, accountability, dependability, and continuous growth and respect for all. Other changes at the top. Short stepping down as president of Board of Health, Paxton. When the Ford County Public Health Department was established on July 1, 2014, rural Paxton resident Mike Short stepped up. At the urging of Elliot's Rick Bowen, who was then chairman of the Ford County Board, Short agreed to serve on the newly formed Health Department's 8-member board, immediately taking on the role of its president. Exactly 12 years later, the 73-year-old Short is finally stepping down, but not entirely. On July 1st, his lengthy run as Board Health President comes to an end. Short plans to continue to serve, however, as a member of the board on the Board of Health until his current 3-year appointed term expires June 30th, 2028. It's been an enjoyable experience, most of the time, Short said on Friday. Short, a farmer by profession who previously served for 20 years as president of the Paxton Buckley Lota School Board until 2011, will give up the Board Health President's seat on July 1st to Susie Schell, who was elected to the role during the Board of Health's quarterly April meeting. The Vice President's role, currently held by Schell, will be filled in July by Lynn Matthews, with Dr. Mark Spangler continuing to serve as Secretary. The three officers will serve in their respective roles for 1 year. I'm happy to accept this appointment as president of the Ford County Board of Health, said Schell, who has served on the board for about 10 years, with her current term due to expire on June of 2028. I will continue to work with this team to serve the community. Short said he is confident in the board's choice of Schell, who is currently employed by the Office of Statewide Pretrial Services as its deputy chief for Region 3. Short said he and Schell have began planning for this move a couple of years ago. This year, he said, the timing seemed just right. When he first became Board of Health President for Ford County Health Department, which was formed following the dissolution of the Ford Iroquois Public Health Department, Short never envisioned serving so long. When I talked to Rick Bowen about it, quite frankly, he said, give us 1 year to get things going. And now it's like 12 years, Short said with a laugh. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.